The People's History of Kansas City podcast is supported by the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art, celebrating 30 years at the Block Party on Saturday, May 4th. Visitors can enjoy music, food trucks, exhibitions, and artist-led activities. Learn more at kemperart.org.
You listen to A People's History of Kansas City for a fresh take on local history. We want to honor these stories, and we take the reporting very seriously. And sometimes we just need to chill. Wanna hang? Let's party! Join us at our annual benefit, Radioactive, on June 14th. NPR's All Things Considered host Ari Shapiro will make a special appearance, and boy, it's gonna be bumping. You gotta be there. Please come support our work. Ticket information is available at kcur.org/radioactive.
This is A People's History of Kansas City. I'm Suzanne Hogan. So I'm a child of the 1980s, during the height of cassette tape popularity. And this means, obviously, I grew up listening to and loving a lot of tapes. We'd listen to them on our home stereo, in the car, on family road trips, in my Teddy Ruxpin doll.
Hi, my name is Teddy Ruxpin. Can you and I be friends?
Yeah. For younger folks, that was like this talking bear that had a cassette player in the back. Today he seems kind of creepy, but back then it was really cool. Cassettes are just this huge part of my childhood soundtrack, documenting priceless moments from my life and coming of age. I recorded myself playing the piano, interviewing my Poppy and Grammy.
This is Suzanne Hogan's Family Tree Interview. Suzanne is interviewing her grandma, Grammy. Who are your favorite relatives?
Suzanne. I will say Suzanne. No, to be honest, I can't say yet. I know I can't have any favorites. I know that we used to ask my mother in different ones the same question.
As I got older, I started growing my own cassette tape collection. I listened to cassettes on my Walkman, and in high school, I started making mixtapes for friends. I even dorkily recorded my favorite programs and songs off the radio onto cassettes so I could listen back to them whenever I wanted.
From WBEZ Chicago, Public Radio International, This American Life, Myra Glass. Most weeks on our program.
This was before the days of podcasts and streaming, y'all. Some people are surprised to learn that cassette tapes are even still around. After CDs and then eventually MP3s, downloading, streaming, these format changes over the decades have drastically changed the way we consume music and all content. But cassettes have held on. And similar to the resurgence of vinyl records, which I also love, cassettes are making their own comeback into the mainstream. In the past decade, cassette sales increased more than 440%. And the reason is surprising.
The demographic driving the popularity of the audio cassette is not nostalgic about audio cassettes. They weren't around when audio cassettes were the big thing.
Younger generations who weren't even alive when cassette tapes first came out are some of the main drivers of this trend.
So kind of crazy of just seeing even high schoolers that will just come running in. Hey, I heard you had the original Jane's Addiction. Let me get this. And it's like, wow.
It's the tangible thing, you know, something real in a world where everything is download. It's in the atmosphere and the ethersphere and whatever. It's something physical in your hand.
And big time artists are part of it, too, releasing new music onto this old format.
Now, like, Taylor Swift comes out on cassette.
Obviously, I love tapes, so it blew my mind when I learned that the largest cassette tape manufacturer in the world is based out of Springfield, Missouri. And it's this family company that we have to thank for helping save this beloved medium when other companies totally gave up. And that's what this episode is all about. Before we go any further, I want to briefly lay out the history of the compact cassette, more commonly known as the cassette tape. So let's start at the beginning. All these formats, vinyl records, film, tapes, CDs, DVDs, are all just ways to store stuff, media, music, images, information. There are analog formats, which refers to any form of media that uses physical signals to represent information. So LPs, film, cassettes, and VHS are examples of that. And then there are digital media formats, which is information electronically transmitted and synthesized in a series of ones and zeros. CDs, DVDs, MP3s, the cloud. Cassette tapes are an analog media format that were first invented in 1962 by Dutch engineer Lou Ottens. He came up with the idea for the cassette out of his annoyance with the big reel-to-reel tape systems that radio broadcast companies and recording studios were using at that time. Ottens, the head of product development for the Philips company, wanted an audio format that was more convenient, say, something that could fit inside the pocket of a jacket. This compact cassette invention debuted in August of 1963 at the Berlin Radio Show, and it immediately got a lot of interest. One for its conveniently small size, notably that it was smaller than a pack of cigarettes, and two for the possibilities it presented, for easily recording dictation, and for sharing pre-recorded music.
That an amplified human voice can shatter a glass is remarkable. That a cassette recording of that voice can shatter a glass is amazing. But after 1,000 plays, can the same cassette still shatter a glass? It can if it's totally new Memorex.
It was just a few short years after the cassette tape was invented that the Stepp family of Springfield, Missouri started what would become National Audio Company. Founded in 1968 by Warren Stepp, who had just retired from being a minister, Warren started the venture with his son, Steve Stepp, who was in his 20s at the time.
So that was a good mix. A young guy wanting something to do and an older guy who was wanting to kind of do something, but he didn't want to work as hard as he had in the past years. So he kind of oversaw things, and then we did this together.
Together, their company worked with those reel-to-reel tape systems that radio stations were using.
Radio stations were automating on broadcast cartridges at that time and using reel-to-reel tape. They would take LPs that came in, transfer them to tape so they wouldn't degrade every time they played them. And then the announcements were being done on broadcast cartridges, which were something like an 8-track.
8-track tapes were another analog tape system that was popular at the time. The company made broadcast cartridges and distributed blank tape to radio stations and recording studios all over the country. But it took some time for this new compact cassette tape invention to catch the interest of the Steps. In fact, Steve Stepp still remembers the day a rep from the company Ampex came in and showed him his first ever cassette tape.
Took it out of his pocket and showed it to me. And he said, "What do you think of that?" And I looked at it and I said, "Not much. It looks like you could maybe put it in a doll and the doll would have a voice. Doesn't look like much to me."
Little did Steve know, that small audio format would go on to dominate the audio market for the next decade and would one day be his main bread and butter.
I was wrong about the audio cassette, and it became rapidly the medium for music.
In the 1970s, the boombox gained popularity in the United States, making it easier for people to play their cassette tapes wherever they wanted. Then Sony introduced the Walkman in 1979, which made it even more convenient for people to listen to music on their own and on the go. But the rise of the cassette tape was also alarming to some, mainly record company executives who weren't totally happy about the idea that people could easily make their own recordings, the free dubbing. It was this very feature that gave rise to the underground aspect of tape love and fueled burgeoning genres like hip-hop. The subversive aspect of tape, that it was small and easy to copy, also enhanced the role of cassette culture in creating social change around the globe. It was an easy way to share underground music and new ideas, challenging regimes in places like Egypt, Iran, and Chile, and behind the Iron Curtain during the Cold War. By the mid-1980s, cassette sales surpassed the sales of vinyl records.
The usual, sir.
Even after 500 plays, our high-fidelity tape still delivers high fidelity.
National Audio Company in Springfield, Missouri was just one of many in the cassette dubbing and distribution business at that time. They were getting their cassette tapes from Ampex. But the company couldn't keep up with all the demands from its customers. So National Audio Company decided to buy its own cassette loading machine.
And we saw that thing could make 2,000 cassettes an hour. And we thought, that's it. We'll never need a second machine. Wrong again. Within a year, we bought two more. Within another year, we bought two more. And by the time we had gone about 4 or 5 years, we had 16 machines running, and we had outgrown the building we were in. So we knew something was going on here.
Like I mentioned, tapes were the thing in the 1980s. But it was also in the 80s that the same company and person who brought us this new analog darling, the cassette tape, also had a hand in creating the format that some might call its nemesis.
Philips announced the next best thing to live music, compact disc.
Lou Ottens, the Dutch engineer at Philips Company who invented the cassette tape, also oversaw the division that developed the compact disc, CDs. And as the invention of this new format spread and caught on, things started to not look so good for the cassette tape. Fun fact, Billy Joel's 52nd Street gets the credit for being one of the first albums released as a CD in 1982. After that, CDs started to have their big moment. They say it
takes a lot to keep a love alive. That was the end of the audio cassette as far as everybody was concerned. Compact disc ran the cassette right out of the music business.
And just like Radio Raheem's famous ghetto blaster ran out of double D batteries in the film Do the Right Thing,
20D energizers.
It seemed like cassettes were losing power. By 1991, music CD sales surpassed vinyl records and cassette tapes. By this time, Steve Stepp was running National Audio Company. His dad, Warren, passed away in 1994. And you might think that a thing like the rise of the CD would have buried a company like theirs. But here's the thing. It didn't.
We took kind of an unusual trip through the cassette industry.
This time period actually turned into a pivotal moment of strategic repositioning for their company. They weren't in the business of making duplications of music cassettes then. They were doing books on tape and spoken word type things.
Compact disc ran the cassette right out of the music business, but it didn't touch the audio cassette in the recorded book business and structural materials. We weren't hurt by that.
So they kept chugging along, churning out cassettes. And they also moved with the trends of the times and got into selling blank compact discs and VHS tapes. When other competitors who had been in the cassette music business started to give up on the format, National Audio Company saw an opportunity in their unwanted equipment.
We bought just hundreds of duplication machines, mastering machines, loaders, and all that sort of thing.
They started growing what has become a giant collection of specialized audio cassette equipment.
Everybody thought we were crazy. That's still true. Everybody still thinks we're crazy. But they did. People thought, well, what in the world are they going to do with this? We're trying to get it out of the way, and we need room to devote our personnel and our floor space to the CD. So we helped them do that.
The early 2000s were kind of this question mark moment about the future and longevity of analog formats, as even newer digital innovations started to gain popularity and take the lead.
And then a funny thing happened to the CD, downloading.
Downloading and sharing programs like Napster and LimeWire gave CDs and all other formats a real run for their money. Also, remember when television switched over from analog to digital and you had to buy those special converter boxes instead of using antennas? Now they're built into TVs, but that also marked the shift to the new and current digital dominant era. But Steve Stepp remembers a day in particular that validated his belief in the future of the cassette tape.
We got a contact from Pearl Jam, the record label that was doing Pearl Jam at the time, and it was their 20th anniversary, and they wanted to see if audio cassettes still had a life. So they wanted 15,000 copies of a new album they were turning out. It was going to go in a gift box with a reel of tape, with a vinyl record, and with a CD and a scrapbook. All the recording media had the same album on it, but they had the scrapbook for their fans. So we made 15,000 tapes. Funny thing happened. They were all gone on pre-sale. Smashing Pumpkins heard about that. And they thought, well, maybe there's still some life to this thing. They ordered 15,000 copies of a new album. We made those, delivered them to them. The day they arrived at their warehouse, they were already sold out. And that woke the record labels back up to the fact the audio cassette wasn't dead. There was still a market for it out there.
This was about the mid to late 2000s, and it seemed that the appetite for music on cassette was still out there from both new fans and the nostalgic cassette diehards.
My very first piece of music came on cassette, so I've always kind of had a soft spot for it.
It's part of our senses, being able to hold something.
I just love the click.
In a world with ones and zeros, having something very tactile.
I think that's what we all want, having that connection with music.
I have a great old Magnavox boombox at home, and that's what I use in my bedroom.
So, like, records are probably my favorite, but my love affair with cassettes is by far the longest. I still buy cassettes regularly. It's the only medium I never stopped buying.
With a lot of other cassette companies out of the picture at this point, this put National Audio Company in a unique position. While they continued on with recorded books and instructional materials on cassette, they also started to fill this music gap for bigger mainstream artists flirting with the cassette idea for releases. And for independent musicians, National Audio Company had become a vital resource, filling a major void. Cassettes, along with CDs, were the affordable option for DIY musicians to release music on their own terms and in smaller quantities. And I know this to be true from my own personal experience. I play bass and sing in a band called Nature Boys. We're like a DIY punk rock and roll band, and we've been buying blank cassettes for dubbing and making tapes of our albums from National Audio Company for well over a decade. When we tour in our circuit, we see a lot of other self-released artists doing the same, putting out their own tapes that are coming from National Audio Company. And our scene is not unique in that way. It's the same scenario for other underground music genres, hip-hop, metal, emo, noise.
So we had been picking up independent bands at a rapid rate ever since this started back again, to the point that now, at this time, you know, we don't deal with the same band day after day after day, week after week. They'll turn out maybe two or three releases a year, but we're dealing with about 5,000 independent labels worldwide now. So that has really come back.
Defying the odds, tapes still had a life at the start of the 21st century, and business was good at National Audio Company. But they were about to hit a major roadblock.
You seem like a person who likes to know what's going on in the world. But do you know what's going on in Kansas City? Start your morning with Kansas City Today. This daily news podcast tells you what's going on at home in 15 minutes or less. Listen to Kansas City Today from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
Hey, Mackenzie Martin here. And I just wanted to say, if you're enjoying this People's History episode, there's another one you should definitely check out. It's called Hot 103 Jams and the Birth of Black Radio. And it's all about radio pioneer Andrew Skip Carter, who created the oldest black-owned radio station in the country from right here in Kansas City. Again, that's Hot 103 Jams and the Birth of Black Radio. Do yourself a favor, scroll down in the feed and just cue it up right now. Okay, now back to the show.
It was in the early 2000s, says Steve Stepp, that National Audio Company found itself positioned as a key part of the music cassette world. But before we go any further, I want to introduce you to another very important member of the Stepp family.
I'm Philip Stepp, Vice President of National Audio Company.
As a teen, Phil worked at National Audio Company with his grandpa, founder Warren Stepp, and his dad, Steve Stepp.
Yeah, I started working here during the summers, mostly during high school.
But Phil wasn't always on the path to be part of running the family business until a major industry shakeup went down. Okay, so here's the deal. Like I said, National Audio Company was in the business of making tapes. But that didn't mean that they made every part of the tape in-house. Some parts of the production were sourced from other companies, like the actual magnetic tape that came inside the cartridges. For many years, they got their cassette tape from the company Ampex Corporation.
But even they got caught up in the thing, well, the cassette is dead.
Ampex pulled the plug on making cassette tape in the early 2000s. So did other big companies like 3M and BASF. So National Audio Company shopped around. They found a company in Siberia called ECP and bought tape from them for a few years before they suddenly stopped production. So they searched again and found a company in South Korea called Sehan.
And then we got notice from them. They'd made a sudden decision. The cassette tape business was over with, and as of December, they would make no more cassette tape. We asked Sehan, how much stock have you got on hand? And they had 300,000 reels of tape on hand, and we said, ship it.
Steve and his son Phil figured that stock would last about 3 years.
Phil and I looked at each other and we said, well, we got two choices. We can go out of business in about 3 years, or we can make tape.
This feels like a very dramatic moment to me. Like, what was it like here? Were you guys stressed?
Stressful, dramatic, traumatic, either way. This was, we saw the handwriting on the wall, and that was it right there. And then being bullheaded and possibly making what would look like a foolish decision, we said, well, we've already gone against the trend once. We bought equipment when everybody else wanted to get rid of it. Maybe we should start making tape.
They started acquiring even more equipment and began the process of trying to figure out how to make their own music quality cassette tape. And the clock was ticking. No pressure, right? To many, this would feel pretty daunting, maybe even just impossible. But luckily, the right people stepped up to help out. And it didn't hurt that Phil Stepp is a scientist.
This is a tape coating line. This is the base film right here. It's a little thicker than shrink wrap.
Phil Stepp majored in biology, psychology, and chemistry for his undergrad, and then got his PhD in neuroscience. After teaching for a while, he decided to go back to work for National Audio Company in 2018. That's when he joined up with the rest of the team to try to devise a recipe, process, and machinery to make music-grade ferromagnetic tape.
And because of the vapor pressure characteristics of MEK and cyclo, that evaporates almost immediately.
Which turns out is a very complicated process involving materials from all over the world. Recently, I got a chance to tour National Audio Company's facility with Phil. The big old building that they own is right in the center of downtown Springfield, Missouri, and it's a massive operation.
The first three floors on this site are actively used for our operation. The fourth floor is our archives. The fifth floor is storage.
Cassette tape actually starts as a powder. Then it has to be blended, made into a liquid slurry, then leveled out, sent through big pressure pots, coated, cut. It involves physics, chemistry, magnetic and electrical engineering. As part of the tour, Phil took me to meet maintenance technician Monty Cheney.
You feel like talking for a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay.
A math wizard, audiophile, and tinkerer, Monty's office is a bit chaotic, filled with tubes and torn apart tape machines.
Don't get hurt and don't fall, for
don't
goodness sake.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to hurt anything in here. Just don't break your body.
I was going to say, if I break anything in here, I feel like you could probably fix it.
That's what we do.
Both Phil and Monty say in addition to the team at National Audio Company, they got a lot of outside help from people who had retired from other companies in the industry that had given up on tape. These people wanted to offer their wisdom and they wanted to see tape make it, which was great for National Audio Company, but it added another layer of pressure. A lot of the hands-on experts were getting up there in age and some had passed away.
The real problem with doing resurrection work like this is everybody's dead. If we need anything, we generally have to build it.
Monty started at the company around the time they had to start figuring this all out. And with that outside help and then Phil going all in, they began an aggressive process of researching and trial and error.
Trying to figure out where our problems were and why we were getting variable results some days and other days it sounded great with what we were making. I checked some of the chemistry and that sort of thing.
Phil says they'd tweak things, then try again, and then again, and then...
Eventually, I think it was in March of 2019, we started actually making good tape.
They utilized some improvements in chemistry to get a better quality magnetic oxide on the tape. Monty Cheney says their tape and the process of making it combines old and newer technology. They've made creative modifications to their equipment, like restoring an old credit card machine that made magnetic strips and a cigarette wrapping machine. Monty says they've brought the cassette tape into a new era.
The tape that manufactured today has no comparison to the cassette tape of the 80s and 90s because the oxides have become so much more stable and better to work with, and we get a lot better audio output.
Having found a way to produce quality cassette tape in-house, Phil Stepp says the next venture will be producing quarter-inch reel-to-reel tape, which is also making a bit of a comeback in niche audiophile engineer circles. As the tour continues, we go by what Monty refers to as the Room of Insanity, where all the tape is cut to size, and then we see the assembly line, where the dubbing and packaging happens. It's pretty cool to see how it all comes together. Phil and Steve Stepp say they're at a point now where they're ahead on tape production. They've got a table filled with reels of blank tape that they've made that's ready to be dubbed, which is pretty different from the precarious situation they were in just 5 years ago.
When somebody tells you this can't be done, when the whole world has decided this is over with, and you don't have enough sense to realize that, and you do it, and you not only do it, you do it very well, that's satisfying.
Now, National Audio Company is the largest cassette tape manufacturer in the world, and the only producer of music-grade ferromagnetic tape, making Springfield, Missouri, the unlikely capital of this cassette tape revival.
We're famous for Wild Bill Hickok and the shootout on the square. We're not famous for technology here. Could have been New York, could have been L.A., could have been Mexico City, but it was here because we were here, and we're the people who started picking the pieces up and putting them back together.
In the year 2024, it's hard to say what the future of any format is going to be down the road. To add to a bit of the uncertainty, the building that National Audio Company owns and operates out of is currently up for sale. Steve and Phil say they don't need the whole building anymore to do their operations, so they could stand to save a lot of money if they moved someplace smaller. All that is still up in the air, but the Stepps want to assure tape lovers that they shouldn't worry.
It's been a long story, all of it's against the odds, and here we are.
You know, looking ahead, what does the next 10, 20, 30 years look like for National Audio Company?
You probably better ask Phil.
Right now, tape is really popular. Hopefully it stays that way for a while. I mean, we kind of know eventually there will be a format that comes along that will eclipse tape. But, you know, as long as tape is popular and selling and people want it, I mean, we're planning on doing it.
One of the things the company is most proud of is the enhanced quality of the music-grade cassette they're producing now. Just recently, for Disney, they put out Star Wars: The Force Awakens. The Stepps say it's the best recording they've made in 55 years. People's History of Kansas City is a production from KCUR Studios. This episode was reported, produced, and mixed by me, with editing by Barb Shelley. Our senior producer is Mackenzie Martin. Special thanks this episode to intern David McKeel and intern Anna Schmidt, who interviewed record store owners Stu Aiken, Joel Garcia, Jan Fickman, and Judy Mills, who you heard from. You heard archival audio from Worlds of Wonder, WBEZ, Memorex, Sony, Maxell, Philips, Do the Right Thing, and Disney's Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Music from Blue Dot Sessions, A-ha, Negative Approach, Billy Joel, Public Enemy, Pearl Jam, The Smashing Pumpkins, De La Soul, and Nature Boys. If you like this episode, we'd love to hear from you. Write us a review, share it with a friend, or shoot us an email at peopleshistorykc@kcur.org. We also have a Facebook group you can join for more stories about the people who created Kansas City. And if you haven't yet, you should totally check out our episode, 50 Years of Hip Hop in Kansas City. It's a fascinating zoom in on the genre in our town and has so much local music in it. It's like one of the best hip hop mixtapes I've ever heard. We'll be back in your feeds in May. Until then, I'm Suzanne Hogan. Take care and thanks for listening.
What words of advice would you want to give to relatives down the road, 50 years?
God gives us this day to live, and you can't help what happened yesterday. And you don't know what's going to happen the next day, so live each day to the fullest.